Welcome to the Queer Confidence Podcast, the podcast to help you become your most confident queer self. I'm your host, he, she, they, Coach Alex Ray, and I haven't always been this confident. In fact, I used to be super insecure. And through this show, I want to share with you what's worked for me, my clients, and my guests so that you can become more confident. Hello, my unicorns. Welcome back to another special guest episode. Today, I am so excited to have with me Flamie Grant. She's a shame slaying, hip swaying, singing, songwriting drag queen making Christian music that speaks directly to her experience as a queer person. And you're going to just learn all the most amazing tips from her today. So welcome, Flamie, to the Queer Confidence Podcast.
Thank you. Tips on tips. Happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. Also, I'm so proud of myself for not totally fumbling your tongue twister intro.
I know. I didn't make it easy, but you nailed it. You nailed it.
Oh my God. Well, I think we got to start with the obvious. For anyone that knows you, they know you've topped the Christians. And by that, we mean you are the first drag queen to ever top the iTunes single, Christian singles, and iTunes Christian albums. And your album was there for a while, too.
It was there for 9 days. I topped for 9 days. You know how exhausting that is?
I can't even imagine.
Me neither. This is the first time I've ever topped anything. So there you go.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about the journey. What was that like being on top for so long?
It was wild and very unexpected. My hope with this whole, all the shenaniganery that happened around this was just to chart at all on the Christian charts. And so I thought that would be a win. Like, let's just have a drag queen, like, show up on the Christian charts, period, anywhere in the top 100, top 200. I don't care. Like, just to be able to say that there was a drag queen on the Christian charts would be huge. But the sales caught wind, girl. I don't know. Like, people latched on to the story, and TikTok was very good to me, and folks went out and downloaded the record. They downloaded the single. And I mean, within 24 hours, both had hit number one. And then, yeah, like we said, the album stayed there for quite a while. I was the literal face of Christian music on iTunes for over a week, which is crazy, crazy.
I kept going on to check, and I just, every time I was like, please be there, please be there, please be there. Yes!
So crazy.
Oh my gosh. It was so fun to see you there. And it was also really funny when I found out about it through Instagram. I think like the Hillcrest account posted.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. And then I started looking into you, and I was like, oh my God, I met her.
Hold on. We did a whole gig together.
We did a whole gig. We had a conversation.
We did. And we hung out backstage.
Yeah. Me in my underwear, you in your, like, in your full...
In my leotard.
Yes. Yeah. You were in your leotard. You were in your leopard print rainbow leotard.
My Lisa Frank fantasy. I love Yes. it. Ember Bain made that for me in Palm Springs, and I wear that any chance I get.
It's so gorgeous.
Yeah.
Well, for those that don't really know the drama that led to you topping the charts... because I really think that was also like a big reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast, because the way that you showed up, I think, is a way that all of our unicorns here can learn from and really improve their confidence and how they might address things themselves. So let's talk about Sean.
That sounds like a terrible, like, HBO miniseries title.
It really
Sean
does.
Well, so yeah, Sean Foyt is the person of interest at the moment. And if you don't know who this is, good for you. If you do, it means you probably caught wind of his name either either through this story, which made mm-hmm. national headlines, or more likely a couple of years prior in the middle of pandemic, Sean Foyt, who is a self-described MAGA worship leader, whatever that means.
it sounds culty and horrifying.
Yeah. He was the one going around during pandemic and holding these big worship services out in public with, you know, just hordes of people unmasked, you know, while the rest of us were like kind of watching on in horror and saying, oh, okay, cool. So like what percentage of that crowd is going to be dead in a month? Like that's how this disease is working right now. So anyway, Sean, you know, just he just came for me on Twitter is all, as people do. But it was in response to some work I had done. I had collaborated with another musician, Derek Webb, who back in the day was in a big Christian band that was called Caveman's Call. By back in the day, I mean when I was coming up in youth group, in church youth group. So the 90s and early 2000s. Yes. And Derek has, you know, since had a solo career and is a really great guy, good ally, and a good friend to me. And so we had collaborated on some music. And Sean Foyt saw that collaboration and said, well, this is the, I think he says, the end goal of deconstruction, which, if you don't know what that word is, it's just kind of the buzzword right now for like looking at your inherited belief systems, i.e., religion, like looking at your religion being like, okay, this is what was handed to me, and do I actually believe it, and is it valuable, and is it good, or is it doing more harm, those kinds of questions. And so Sean was like, well, this is the end goal of deconstruction, a drag queen collaborating with a Christian musician, blah blah blah, and
which
I know, right,
pausing like, on that for a moment is hilarious, that's like
that was what we were working towards.
We have made it, y'all.
Done.
We done. Deconstruction over. Everyone go back to what you were doing.
Yes. Like, this was the end goal, and now we can chill.
Yeah.
I know. Just, like, crazy. So much crazy in the world. But anyway, you know, I am a drag queen, and I do deal with online trolls on the reg. So I just responded cutely, oh baby, no, end goal, we're just getting started. And Sean came back and said, well, good for us, nobody listens to you or cares what you do. Which is like the cattiest thing, right? Like, that is such a, like, that's mean. That is Rachel McAdams in Mean Girls, like. Like, okay,
baby, honestly, if you're gonna come school. For a drag queen, you gotta have some creative clapbacks, because
you do.
Like, no one likes you anyway is just just get ready.
And I would like to think that maybe Sean will have learned his lesson by now, because I said, oh really, no one cares, no one, Sean. And you know, to be fair, I did not have a big Twitter following at the time, so he probably, like, because this is where this exchange happened, was on Twitter, or excuse me, X, whatever, Elon. he probably looked at my Twitter following and was like, oh, well, this person's inconsequential, but that's because I hate Twitter and never invested any time in it.
Right.
But I did have quite a decent following on TikTok. So that's where I went and I said, hey pals, guess what? This thing just happened. And here's what else is in play. I have a record that I released last year. It is already sitting there in the Christian genre, 'cause that's the genre I put it in when I chose to release my independent album. And it had done fine. I was really pleased with the performance of my record as an independent first-time artist. I've released music in the past under other names, but this was Flamey Grant's first record.
Yeah.
And, you know, it had done respectably. And so I was like, I would love to see if there is a chance. And, you know, this is, I just put out the plea on TikTok. If there's a chance we could get this record to chart on the Christian charts. And because it's there, I have a song that is quote unquote a worship song. Like, there's a lot to talk about in terms of what that means for me and this song in particular, but like it is, it's a worship song. I wrote it for the church I used to be a part of. And And what if we got that song? What if we got a worship song by a drag queen to chart after a worship leader, a MAGA worship leader, like, came for me online? And people really liked that narrative, and I kind of suspected they would, mm-hmm. which is why I rolled the dice. But wow, I never expected that it would, yeah, just do what it did. It was crazy.
Yeah, you kind of like exploded there over the. It was like how many days was it between Twitter and the Twitter exchange and blowing up on iTunes?
Literally the next day. Like, it wasn't even really? Yeah, it wasn't even a full 24 hours.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So
what an emotional roller coaster. Oh, I yeah. imagine
it was wild. It was so, I was like, I don't know what to do. I was like calling up friends. I was like, this feels like a moment. This feels like something's happening. Should I, what do I do? And they were like, girl, get a publicist, do it. Just do it. And I was like, okay, I don't even know how to do that, but somebody knew somebody, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I hired someone to help, and the story got out to more, outlets, media outlets picked it up. I think Paste Magazine was like one of the first, like, I was so excited about Paste Magazine because it's like the music nerd magazine, you know? And I'm like, yes, like that's yeah. the one I want to be in. And then like the next day Rolling Stone called, and I was like, oh, like shit myself. Like, yeah. So, you know, and from there it was like Newsweek and Entertainment Weekly and NPR, like all these outlets picked up the story. So it was a whirlwind. I had to quit my job 2 weeks early. I was already planning to quit. I had already put in my notice. I was mm-hmm. quitting the job and moving across the country, and I was going to start, you know, doing drag full time regardless. That was already in the works. And then this happened, and I'm very glad it did, because it's made it a lot easier to go into full time drag work after having a little bit of a moment in national press. So it's been very helpful. Thank you, Sean Foyt.
Indeed. Like, what perfect timing for everything, too.
Yeah, crazy.
So,
I mean, if back in the day we would have said, oh, it's just such a God thing.
It's such a God thing. Yes. All in His timing.
Absolutely. Yeah, time and a place for everything. For such a time as this. Yes.
Well, I'm so happy for you, and I'm so glad that you were able to, like, that all of these things lined up so perfectly for you to really help launch your career into full-time drag. It's just incredible, and I'm so proud of you, and so happy for you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
I'm curious, you know, for anyone listening, what lessons have you learned that you could share with them? Anyone that's listening who may have or may have been, is, or will be facing online bullying or harassment.
Yeah. And basically, if you have a smartphone, you will probably face online harassment at some point, right? In some
form. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I've been dealing with it for a while. But like, even before this whole thing with Sean Foyt, I had some like success on TikTok, and with things going viral on TikTok, also come trolls. So I had been dealing with it for a while, and I really had kind of worked through it to a point where I know when it's okay for me to respond. And that, for me, like, that feels like I'm responding purely for the joy of it. Like, because I know it's going to be a fun thing for me. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't respond if I'm mad. Like, if it actually gets under my skin, if a troll comes on and says something and it actually hurts or makes me angry or creates any kind of negative reaction whatsoever, I don't respond. And I didn't always. Like, I used to go in like right away with my, you know, that knee jerk reaction, and I learned pretty quickly that those usually don't go very well, because I am invested in the outcome of it. Right. Right. I want to win. Like, I want to be right. I want to shame them or put them in their place or whatever. And those are never great reasons, I don't think, to engage with another human being. I think it has to be a bigger, like you have to have, I think one of two things have to happen. It has to be either be like, on behalf of a cause or like a group of people or someone else, someone like not just yourself kind of thing. So that there's kind of that righteous anger response. I think that's something that can motivate us to do really good things in the world. Or for me, I think I did a lot of internal work to just like realize and remind myself daily that these are very inconsequential things, that like these comments, like they're not reflective of anything true about me, because these people don't know me. They're only speaking for, it can only be a projection, right? Because they've seen, you know, 2 seconds of a video of me, and they've created this whole narrative around who I am or what they believe about me. And I'm like, that can only be a projection. They know nothing about me. So they're speaking from whatever their own place of shame is or their own place of pain. And it's not about me. So, but when it is for me, like the times I choose to respond now are usually one of those two things. And honestly, it's usually when I'm just there to have a little fun with it. And I'm just completely detached from the outcome. Like, I don't care about winning with the person. So I can just be like silly or subversive or whatever with it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of how I felt about the Sean thing. Cause honestly, like my friends were all told me, they were like, oh my gosh, like Sean Foyt's coming for you. Like, and I was like, who? Like, I genuinely did not. And I remembered hearing about this pastor in pandemic who was holding these worship services. And when I realized that's who it was, I was like, oh, okay, cool. But I didn't even realize at the time, I think that he had like, I think he has like 100 million followers or something like that. Something crazy.
What the heck?
I know, like how, but, so I truly was detached from the outcome of that. I wasn't looking at it as an opportunity. I wasn't looking at it as anything other than like, how silly that you like think this is what we're trying to do all along. Like, no, we're just getting started. Like it was a flip little response that I was detached from. So
yeah,
that for me, I think is just a good litmus test or barometer of like how invested am I right now? And am I actually activated right now? Are my feelings, am I having negative responses and reactions to what's going on? Or is this just something I can turn into an opportunity or turn into a teachable moment, or honestly just have some fun with? Like, that's fine too. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, just remember that most online bullying, especially coming from people that you don't know, it can't be anything other than a projection. It can't actually be about you because they don't know you. So it's one of my favorite quotes. I think it's from her book, Bossy Pants, but Tina Fey was talking about the internet and the, you know, the flack she's taken on the internet for different things in her career. And I can't quote it exactly. I should probably have it on a sticky note somewhere, but she basically says in her very Tina Fey way, like, the internet is not a real thing that you have to obey. Like, just like, let it go. It's not real. And I was like, you're right. You don't have to obey strangers on the internet. You can just let them go.
Yeah. And, oh my God, all of that is just such a beautiful framework to, I really like what you said about projections and realizing that it cannot be anything more than that.
Yeah.
I always talk about what I do in my career and online, or really my life, as it's art. And so no matter what, people are going to have opinions about it, but what they're doing is they're just observing art, and it's triggering thoughts and feelings in them, and then they're expressing that. So I really never have any control over that, because we don't have, that's the point of art.
Yes.
It just sparks thoughts and feelings. And
it is. And it's going to be an individual response for every single person. So.
And I really, there's so much wisdom in what you said about not responding in anger, because anger really does just blind us to, you can't respond in a thoughtful way. Even if you think, oh great, I can go after this person, like if you're blindly angry, you are going to fuck up. You're gonna trip up, and then you're the one that looks like the idiot instead of waiting until you get to a place where it's no longer so triggering for you. So
I just so this wise. Morning, I this morning I just rewatched the video. Have you seen the woman who like parents herself? Like she makes a video about her trip to Bath and Body Works or Bed Bath and Beyond, one of them.
Okay,
and she's trying to get candles. You haven't seen this one?
I don't think so. Tell me.
Oh my gosh, it's like 4 minutes long, and it's just like she went home and she set up her camera and like her good lighting, and she's like, I have a story to tell you, and she just goes into this long saga about how mad she was that she called Bed Bath and Beyond to make sure they had this candle. And she drove a really long way, and she's somewhere up north. So it's like all the city names are funny. I can't even remember.
Okay.
It's like, I can't remember, but it's just like her tone and everything. It's just, it's a perfect theatrical experience. And she like, the whole thing is just that she got there and they made a mistake. They didn't have the candles, and she was mad that she drove all the way. And she was like, I deserve to be compensated for this. And she just goes off the rails. And she's and the thing is, she's like clearly thought this through, and she's pretty measured and pretty like she doesn't lose control really at any point. A couple of times she gets a little into it and starts, you know, yelling at the camera. But for the most part, so she thinks that she has just like delivered this like scathing indictment of Bed Bath and Beyond, and she and in particular one cashier that she talked to called Jen, and every time she says Jen's name she does air quotes with her fingers as though Jen's like not her real name or something. Like it's just like you're watching this woman descend into absolute insanity over these candles that someone just made an honest mistake over,
right?
And it's just the most delightful like schadenfreudic experience. But anyway, but all that to say, like, that is exactly that. Like, she thought she was like doing something, and she's now the laughing stock, you know, like everybody watches that video and is like, oh my gosh, you're like a nightmare human. And poor Jen at Bed Bath, and like we all feel bad for Jen. Like, you were trying to get her fired, and we feel bad for her. So
yeah.
Responding out of your feels is just not a great move. Like, take the beats, take the day, whatever you need to like, and come back to it. And most likely you'll come back to it and remember that the block button is your friend, and you'll just block the person. And that's what I end up doing most of the time with people who genuinely get to me. I'm like, I just don't need that. I don't need your energy. I don't need you on my page. Mm-hmm. Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. Okay. I want to transition here a little bit into talking about your personal life. Outside of drag, you are non-binary.
I am. Right?
Can you tell us a little bit about your journey? What's it been like to understanding your queer identities?
Yeah. So my, like, I don't even know. I feel like we don't even talk about it in terms of sexual orientation or preferences anymore. I feel like that's not what we say, but I'm old. I'm sorry. I'm an old gay. So like my sexual orientation, like,
you are not an old gay girl.
I mean, compared to like when you have to like Google what the kids are saying, like when you have to get on Urban Dictionary, I think you've crossed a bridge.
Then I'm old too.
But that's the thing. It, like, the world moves so fast and we grew up so fast now because we're all so connected on social media. So whatever. Yeah. It's great. I love learning from the kids. Like, I love it. But for me, like, my coming to terms with my, like, sexual orientation, like, identifying as gay was, like, a decade-long process in my 20s. I had to come to terms with just even being comfortable saying that about myself. And I didn't start dating until I was 28. Mm-hmm. I didn't have sex until I was like 31. Like, I was a late bloomer, and all thanks to religious trauma and, you know, indoctrinated shame from evangelicalism and all these things.
We know her well.
We know her, unfortunately, far too well. So I really hadn't explored gender identity or expression until I started to think about drag more seriously. And so it was a couple years before pandemic that I really started to get interested in drag. And I had been like a casual observer for a while. But, you know, really like did the deep dive of binging every season of Drag Race and that kind of stuff in like 2018 and 2019. And then pandemic came around and I had gone out. I think my first time in drag was Halloween of 2019. I did a fun little witch moment because it's very easy to do drag on Halloween and it's safe and no one's going to judge you.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's also the gateway, as we know. So I was one of the, I'm a combination Halloween and quarantine queen because like I knew I liked it at Halloween, but it's not like I had the time. I had a full-time job. I was in another band. Like I was never going to like change my career and become a drag queen. That was not in the cards for me.
Right.
But then, you know, Miss Rona locked us all at home and I had hours and hours of free time and I spent mine, you know, watching makeup tutorials and learning to do drag. And so it was that process for me that really opened my mind to, oh, like, am I gender diverse? Like, do I have some fluidity going on in me? I think maybe I do. And it was a wild thing to kind of discover through drag, because you know I literally was doing it just in my bedroom by myself during pandemic, like for fun, and honestly for inner child work is what it ended up being for me. It was like,
we love inner child work here.
Yes. Mama, that little kid, you know, just being able to hold the kid version of myself and say hey, like all those times you got in trouble or you got chewed out for behaving in a certain way that was not befitting of a boy, or you know, messing in your mom's makeup or her closet, like, you're okay. That stuff was actually good. Those impulses and instincts are you, and they're not like your sin nature or your fallen state or any of that bullshit.
Yes.
It's just you, and you're coming back to yourself by doing these things. So it was like that first year of drag was really just that for me. And I was live streaming, and as we did during pandemic. So that's where, I mean, my first drag performances, quote unquote, were on the internet.
I love that. How fun to have that journey, because most drag queens were like fumbling through, how do I do something on the internet?
Yeah.
And it wasn't working well for most of them. You've got the opposite experience. You went from figuring out the online first to coming in person. Definitely.
And that was a fumble for me. Like figuring it out in person was like, this is a whole different game. But yeah, it did just kind of give me insight into myself and how I think so much of my anger actually came from feeling compelled to conform to traditionally masculine identities, right? Traditionally masculine stereotypes in the world, because that wasn't me. It's not my natural state. And so I was living in a very unnatural way, even, even after coming out and being, you know, fully embracing my sexuality and, you know, getting married. I got married in 2019. So like, it's, you know, I've been out and proud for a while, but I had not identified that, you know, there was this like untended part of my soul that I had just been neglecting my whole entire life. Out of shame and out of, you know, being indoctrinated to neglect it basically. And so it was really beautiful to start writing songs as Flamey and use that voice and just see myself, you know, all art is just taking what's inside us and manifesting it in some external form, right? Whether that's sound or sculpture or paint or whatever. And drag is no different. It is an external manifestation of something that you're experiencing internally. And I love that, you know, drag it was such a gift for me to be able to learn more about who I am through that art form, and still, you know, every day getting to do that.
So beautiful. Truly. Thank you for sharing that with us. Playing with things that are traditionally assigned to the opposite gender, I think, is so helpful for anyone to just start understanding yourself more, because until you start breaking down those barriers, especially if you're afraid of it, like I was, like, you're not going to, I don't know, really understand why you're afraid of it And then if you're not afraid of it, great. Play around with it. Have fun. And if it's not for you, it's not for you.
Yeah. But more likely than not, it's going to reveal to you the ways in which you are performing your gender, right? Yeah. Even like you as a, like speaking to you, cis straight white man out there, like you're performing at a percentage of the time, right? Like almost, yes. Almost nobody is 100% John Wayne, right? Like,
right.
Like you, there are things that you feel compelled to do or say or behave or speak like or whatever, because it's an expectation that's been put on you because right. of, frankly, your genitalia. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a huge gift of exploring, just playing with, you know, like put on nail polish, like just once in your life and walk around for a day. Like and I'm obviously speaking to a cis straight white male dude right now, like put on nail polish and walk around and see how you feel, like see what interactions it opens up for you. And, you know, just little things that can help you then understand. It's not going to turn everybody into a drag queen. And frankly, we don't right. want that because there's already enough competition out here among the queens. But what it will do is it'll reveal to you that, oh, like I could relax a little bit. Like I don't have to work so hard to hustle for my acceptance in my social circle. And actually maybe like leaning into more authentic parts of myself that I tend to suppress because mm-hmm. I think other people are going to judge me as being less masculine or less feminine or whatever. Mm-hmm. Leaning into those things can like make me a freer, happier, more whole person, which then just that's magic that we don't have words for. Like we don't have barometers for, but it does something in your relationships. It opens up. It makes people trust you more deeply. It lets other people then respond in kind, and it frees them. Like you become an agent of freedom for other folks. Like mm-hmm. it's magic. It's alchemy. And, I think everybody should deconstruct your gender. If not your faith, at least your gender.
I was literally going to loop it back to that. I was like, here we go. More deconstruction. See?
Yes.
Music wasn't the end goal. We have many things to deconstruct.
Yeah.
Get over it, Sean.
Literally just getting started, baby.
Yes. Oh my God. I think another thing that it really can do is give you a lot of compassion for other people that are also yes. putting on a performance. Like when I go out for networking events or anytime that I'm leading a workshop, anytime that I am like on stage in air quotes, literally or figuratively, I dress all up. It's, I don't do like a full face of makeup. I always do my eyes. Mm-hmm. And because that's my favorite part of makeup.
Yeah.
I do like.
The eyes are the nipples of the face.
Yeah.
Sorry. I had to.
So I got to show off my face nipples.
Yes.
Because I love it. And it's like a piece of art. I love that it's art that also is only going to last for not even a whole day. Like exactly. It's there and it's gone. Like what truer expression of art? It's like a sunset. It's you mm-hmm. have every moment that goes by, it's changing and then it's gone forever. Yep. It's only in our memory. So anyway, I love art. So like then I'll dress up and heels. And when I got into wearing heels through drag was the gateway. I did it for charity, you know.
Yes.
For the first time, and I had been dying to be able to like own heels, put on makeup and all this stuff. And that was the excuse. But heels, the whole point of this fucking tangent I went on was heels and drag. I was like, oh my God, I have a new, extremely heightened appreciation for drag queens after having to have my junk tucked up my ass crack for several hours.
Yeah.
And then the like wearing heels, I was like, my feet are on fire. Mm-hmm. So to everyone that wears heels on the reg, like how And like, I bow down, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's wild. I've devised a way around it in which I, you know, I'm a singer songwriter, so I'm always behind a guitar and a microphone usually when I'm in drag, and I now have incorporated a stomp box into my set, so it's a pedal that you stomp on that mimics a bass drum, so I get a little percussion with my set. But now that it gives me the excuse to like wear flats on stage or like boots, you know, short heel boots or whatever, because you can't stomp on it in a stiletto. It doesn't work. So I've figured out my loophole.
I love it.
So yes, heels, respect, much respect. I still wear them, but only for short periods of time.
And also, like, especially straight men, you gotta try some of the stuff just so you can have appreciation for the women who you're chasing, and then potentially making them feel uncomfortable. Like, they already are physically so goddamn uncomfortable, and now you're making them emotionally uncomfortable. Like, just compassion. There's so much room for compassion.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to also ask you another question here around your personal journey. How have you reconciled your faith and your queer identities? Why not just give it all up?
That is a very good question. And I think you might get a different answer from me depending on the day, right? Like, it's there are days when I definitely want to give it all up. And and I may one day still, you know, like that, who knows what the future holds, but why I'm at where I am, meaning the reason I released the record in the Christian genre, the reason I've kind of leaned into allowing myself to be called a Christian drag queen, even though it's complicated for me, you know, There's a handful of reasons. I would say the biggest one is just purely representation matters, you know, the power of presence. And I'm sure you can relate. Like, there were very few instances for me growing up of seeing anything positive associated with queerness. And
absolutely,
even beyond that, just like, I just didn't even know what queerness was growing up. You know, like, I was so sheltered and so kept within our little evangelical subculture, that it took a long time before I even knew what, like, the words gay and lesbian were. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's knowing that there are still families out there who are raising kids the way mine did, which for me was really difficult and hard, toxic, created mountains of shame that I had to work through later in life, you know, all of these things. Everything we've been talking about so far, like, stems from a fear and shame-based religion that was high demand. So knowing that that's still the case for many kids who are coming up, and knowing what it is to be queer, and knowing that there will always be queer kids coming up in those spaces, it feels important. It feels valuable to me. It feels like a thing I can offer the world, to be someone who just is loud and open and doesn't stays in the space for now, rather than desert it. And to be clear, to be 100% clear, I need people to know, I say this all the time, like, I fully champion leaving. I think that for a lot of people, leaving is the best option, and it's so hard to heal in the place where you were harmed.
Yes.
And so getting out is a really good thing for a lot of people. And so whatever you want to call it, deconstruction, apostasy, I called it apostasy when I did it, because we didn't have the deconstruction term, but like, follow your healing, follow whatever is going to heal you. Mm-hmm. So that's the one side of it, right? And then the other is that sometimes, for certain people with certain dispositions, and I count myself among them, I think that we can stay. Like, if we have the capacity to stay and the desire to stay, and, you know, the knowledge that our staying is potentially gonna save lives, like actually save lives, which that's a message I've gotten more than once now since all of this stuff blew up. People who've slid into my DMs confessing, you know, suicidal thoughts or previous suicidal thoughts until literally hearing my music, which that's a humbling moment. Like, I never set out to write a song to save a life other than my own. But that's the beauty of art and telling our stories and being vulnerable and all of it is we can save more than our own lives sometimes. Yeah. So for some of us, I think staying can be a good path.
Yeah. Congratulations. You're the only one that's ever made me cry on my own podcast.
Oh, oh no.
And I hope it's so worth it. Well, you know, my upbringing was the number one factor to me attempting suicide. And I think that's really what, you know, I told you even before we started recording that, like, for some reason, this question was like really like hitting an emotional spot for me.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll probably get emotional for it. Here we go. Yeah. But you know, there is something so beautiful to me about the art that you're creating and the way that you are being a queer voice in the space that I did not have a queer, like superhero, you know?
Yeah.
And I have worked through so much in therapy around my attempt. And for me then, you know, leaving the church was really the right decision. Yeah. It's still, there's still positive memories, even though I have so much pain around my experiences in the church. I still have happy memories of a sense of community there.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what I think is pulling so much emotion out of me here is that what I see from you is what you're activating in me is this feeling of like, okay, here's like all the good parts about the community that I experienced and that I've missed.
Yeah.
With the acceptance that I longed for my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
I never felt deserved. Like I could have that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was stolen. It was stolen from you. Yeah.
Yeah. I never felt like it was possible or acceptable or like anything would happen other than me being burned in hell. Exactly. And like ostracized. So thank you.
And that's what I, you're welcome. And thank you for making the space available to have this conversation. That's the thing that I think can be really hard for people who didn't maybe grow up in something similar to understand, mm-hmm. because I get that a lot. I get that question a lot. Like, my God, why are you catering to this community that doesn't give a shit about you, that wants you dead, or that, you know, is vilifying you in public, or like passing legislation against you? Like, why do you care what they think? And I'm like, it's not that, you know, I'm not out here chasing an approval I'll never get. There's so many layers, and you touched on 18 of them just now in what you said, but you know, like it's a real part of our lives. Like, we lived good periods, good chunks of our lives. And that was community for us. And that was home. Mm. And that was everything that, the power of nostalgia nowadays, you know, like I think we're more aware than ever of the power of nostalgia, and that's why shows get rebooted and all this. Like,
yeah,
it's like it does something to you, like physiologically in your body, to have those connections back to your childhood and your upbringing. And the other part of it is that we were raised with that fear of what's going to happen to us if we ever leave. What's going to, you know, we're going to, I genuinely believed I would wind up unconscious in a gutter with a needle in my arm. Like that was the only future available to me if I didn't follow the letter of the law that was prescribed.
Yeah.
And so there's so much you have to work through to, and that is such an individual personal journey, and why I would never ever tell someone that they're, you know, not making the right choice by leaving or being selfish by leaving. No, leave. Like, be selfish. Go take care of yourself and put yourself first for the first time in your life. Because I guarantee you, if you're brought up in evangelicalism, you didn't. Mm. And you did not. You never knew what it was like to care for yourself in any way. And so, yeah, it's. I wish we could have more, even just within our own community, more compassion for each other, for the ones who choose to stay, whatever that reason may be, or for the ones who choose to go. Like, just like, let us all have our journeys and go where we need to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautifully said. All right. I want to switch gears here and talk about a much lighter note as we start to wrap things up here. Tell us about, like, what is your favorite song you've ever written? Or maybe that's also hard to choose. Like, is there a song or a few songs that, like, really just, like, hit deep for you?
Yeah, it's, gosh, very hard to choose because it is. I think it was Mindy Kaling who said, like, best friend is not a person, it's a tier. And I just, like, use that for everything. Like, I don't have a favorite one of anything. Like, I just have, like, a whole tier of favorites. Like, I have 18 favorite movies, you know, and they're all my number one favorite. So it's kind of that way for my music too, but I guess I'll just talk about, there's a song on the record called Holy Ground. That's kind of a, what is the word I'm looking for? It's not a B-side, but it's just more of a, it's a low expectations kind of song, right? Like, you're not expecting, I don't know. Like, I didn't even expect much from it when I recorded it. I was like maybe kind of filler. Like, is this a filler song?
Sure.
Because when I first wrote it, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was about. And I wrote it. I wrote this whole thing before Flamey ever existed. So it's one of the ones, and there are a few songs on the record that I had started to write or had written prior to Flamey existing, and then revisited them with Flamey's voice. And I was like, oh, like, this has been in here in me all along, this whole time, this voice, this person, this character Flamey has been trying to get out and speak and have her moment. And so that's one of this, it's one of those songs for me, Holy Ground. And it's just, it ended up being my favorite track on the record, I think. And again, favorite being a tier.
The tier.
For so many reasons, I just think the production on it is amazing. The percussionist we had on that song, Noah Heldman, just like did this trance like thing that just puts my whole body into just like a, I don't know, meditative at ease posture and almost immediately. And, it's just about like nature and like being connected to the earth and just my experience with that. But what it ended up feeling like was just like the right song for a psychedelic journey. Mm. And, you know, so my producer wanted to end, it just has all these oohs at the end that go on and on forever. And my producer like wanted to end it way earlier than I did. And I was like, listen, I'm putting my stiletto down. We are dragging this out because I want people to have a full opportunity to go on whatever journey they need to go on when they listen to this song. So it's like, put that one on your psychedelic playlist.
Love it.
But it's just, yeah, it's one of my favorites. And yeah, I hope it puts you at ease as much as it does me. That's my hope for that song.
Mm. Tell us a little bit about the creative process. Like, what is your creative process?
I wish I could say that, like, I wake up every morning and I do my morning pages and then I invoke the muse and, but it's not like that, girl. It is,
no,
it is whenever I can find the fucking time. Like if I can steal away for a few moments to strum some chords and jot down some lyrics or whatever, I mean, it is being open. It's just it is trying to be open to inspiration whenever and wherever it may strike, because it sometimes she comes at an inopportune moments, and you just got to be ready. But it's also, I think being like it's just important to create the space as well. Like I I'm not great about getting up and journaling and all of this stuff, you know, regularly or consistently, but I do know that if I don't carve out time somewhere in my schedule, like I'm not giving an opportunity to creativity to blossom, right? Like she'll choose the next person. Like the muse will move on to the next person if I hold my hand up to her long enough. Mm-hmm. So it's a mix of being responsive to the moment and then also creating the moment. And I don't know, I've been writing songs since I was 9, and it's just now feels like it's just as much a part of me as anything, you know, brushing my teeth. Like it's just a thing I have to do. And I love it. I'm grateful for the opportunity to write songs that people want to hear. So it's great. Mm.
And what made you decide to combine music and drag, songwriting and drag?
Yeah. honestly, it never really dawned on me, even at the beginning part of pandemic, when I was living with two other musicians. We were house sharing, and so we would all live stream together and we would do concerts, and I would show up to these concerts in drag, and they'd mostly be covers. Like we would just cover songs and drink for 2 hours on a Thursday night with anybody else who wanted to log on with us. And even at that point, I was still like blithely unaware of the potential or possibility of like actually being a drag musician, right? Like that was, I don't know if there was a specific moment, but I do know that it was when I started to see people's responses and reactions to what I was doing online. And the comment that I got over and over again was, I feel seen and I feel safe when Flamey does what Flamey does. And I was like, oh, well, that is exactly, if I have a mission or a ministry or a calling or whatever you want to name it, like that's it. It's to make people feel seen and safe. And so that was when I was like, maybe I should write a song as Flamey and see what that feels like. And lo and behold, you know, I got a whole album out of it, and I'm still writing as Flamey, and there'll be another album next year. And yeah, it's wild, but I am so grateful that the universe showed me this path.
I am so excited. Another album next year.
Yes.
Oh my God. Well, before we close now, I would love to hear, what do you want to share with everyone? What is coming up? What's exciting in your world, and where can they find and follow you?
Well, I'm really easy to find. I'm the only Flamey Grant out there. It's just like Amy Grant, but with a little flame on the front.
Yes.
If you go to my website, flameygrant.com, you'll see all of my upcoming shows. I am touring a lot right now because I'm basically saying yes to everything and also seeking out touring opportunities. So, this is my full-time job. I'm trying to make it work. So you will find me very likely on the road near you at some point over the next few months. So come see me. And yeah, like I said, I'm dropping a new single this month at the end of October for spooky season.
Yay!
Yes. It's called Fortune Teller. So I'm not sure when this will be out, but check and see if Fortune Teller is out. And then after that, yeah, we've be working on a new record with a team that I'm putting together. I'm very excited about, and it probably won't be out until, I mean, a year from now, to be honest. We'll be recording in the spring, and then there's just a lot of work that goes in after that, but
yeah.
But it's, yeah, other than that, catch me on the road, girl.
Perfect. And we'll have all of that linked in the show notes. They can find everything, your tour dates and everything, on your website, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Perfect. All right. Any final closing thoughts that you'd like to share with anyone?
Baby, just be a shame slayer. Look, I can't even say it. Be a shame slayer, baby. We've got enough shame in the world. We need you to slay it. Yeah, that's all.
I love it. Flamey Grant, everyone. Thank you so much for being here with me today. Thanks for sharing your wisdom and your insights and your vulnerability. It's just been an absolute pleasure and delight getting to know more of you today and learning from your experiences.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is absolutely delightful.
You're so welcome. All right, everyone. I will see you on the next episode. Bye. Bye. If you enjoyed this episode, don't keep it to yourself. Share it with a friend so they too can become more confident. You can also help more people find the show by leaving a 5-star review wherever you listen. And if you want to become a more confident queer with support from yours truly, head to coachalexray.com or use the link down in the show notes. I'm looking forward to working with you.